bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FanDuel Sportsbook. NFL Week 6, Monday Night Football Edition. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only, Payne Insider. But this is the perfect time to remind you, all of our loyal listeners out there, if you haven't already done so, not quite sure what you're waiting for. FanDuel.com/bettheboard. $1,000 free bets, enhanced odds, all sorts of great promotions as well for new user signups, just in time for the NBA's opening night coming to you on Tuesday. That's FanDuel.com/bettheboard. Take full advantage there. Payne, I know you're an NBA guy. Are you excited for Lakers-Warriors to tip things off on Tuesday?
I guess. I kind of got out of the NBA a little bit over the last couple of years. We're doing some things on totals there, and yeah, just kind of went away. That's kind of what transpired there. That's kind of all I can divulge. We haven't been doing as much in the NBA as we were 2 years ago.
Only so many hours in the day to try and cover the entire sporting landscape.
You did well there. Yes, that's one reason.
but as we begin to put what we saw yesterday in the National Football League in context, kind of wanted to get your thoughts on some of the main takeaways for everything you saw transpire thus far during NFL Week 6.
Books did not have a good day from the sounds of it. That was a rough one for the house. It wasn't a great weekend for us, that's for sure. It was one of our worst, I shouldn't say worst weekends, but it was a down weekend for us. And although it could have changed a little bit, we had Dallas late. Rough morning. We had the Patriots plus the points late, and that did not go well. That actually would have been, if we got the Patriots home, it would have been a break-even weekend for us. Baltimore is the one that we regretted not playing. Should have been there in that one. That was a game that we liked. Kind of broke it down. Frustrating because you call exactly where the market's going to go. You know, you knew that game was going back to three. That was the side. So that's a regret that I have this morning, is not playing Baltimore yesterday.
Well, it's also good to see other major football publications come out after, in the wake of the Chargers' loss, talk about how they need to be more effective and efficient on third and fourth downs. Pretty sure that's a narrative.
On third and fourth down?
Yeah, on third and fourth down. The Chargers have to be better. The luck ran out for the Chargers on third and fourth down. I'm glad that finally got out there in the wake of a 34-6 loss instead of people actually talking about that beforehand, because I'm not quite sure what podcast had mentioned the fact that the Chargers had to be better with an early down success rate if they were going to continue to be a freight train rolling down the tracks.
That one was, give Baltimore credit. That was a quick turnaround. And the energy they had to exert Monday night, right? It wasn't just one of those games where it's like, they played Monday night and that thing was wrapped up minutes into the second quarter. That was one where they had to fight back. They exerted a ton of energy, down double digits against the Colts. And then to turn around against an opponent of the Chargers caliber, I thought was really, really impressive. And ultimately, Brandon Staley's style just didn't work. He hasn't changed things. I'm all for the way he is constructing his defense, but at some point you do need to match up to your opponent and play a style that's a little bit more conducive to each and every single opponent you play versus just saying, hey, we're going to do what we do. And I'm making that sound extremely simple, but again, did not put a ton of guys in the box yesterday. And that really allowed Baltimore to control that game. And then obviously the third and fourth down luck, the Chargers just didn't have. And the Ravens were able to play keep away. I was looking this morning, Chargers only had 21 minutes of possession. And then, of course, as the article alluded to, that Herbert's heroics finally ended, and the Chargers were 4 for 16 on third and fourth down, and they averaged 1.8 yards per play on those two downs. So the piss poor early down offense the Chargers have basically had all season finally came to bite them against a top five defense on third and fourth down in the Ravens. Now, it did help Mike Williams was banged up. The Chargers couldn't really attack Baltimore where they were most vulnerable, but I don't think that would have changed things. The offense did nothing. I mean, the points they put up on the board were basically turnover-induced. And it was a very simple game plan. It was one that you kind of see play out, and I think that's why it was so frustrating to me. It's like, you're like, Ravens will be able to run the ball here. But like, yeah, if they just kind of sit back and are good on early downs, they got a really good third and fourth down defense. They should survive this. And both things came to fruition, and I don't have a penny on the Ravens. So quite frustrating there.
Well, when you look at the Ravens, their upcoming opponent will be in the division against the Cincinnati Bengals. I know a lot of people go, well, the Bengals beat up on the Lions. But as we remind folks all the time around here, it's not about just winning. It's about exceeding odds makers' expectations. And the Bengals put an absolute thumping on Detroit in what many perceived was a flat spot. We know there was a battle back and forth down to 3, 3.5, even some fours on game day. Yeah. But it was more about Cincinnati defensively, Payne, that really opened my eyes. I mean, they held the Lions largely in check from start to finish until Detroit moved the ball to make the box score look a little bit better with some garbage time yards and points.
That was a really interesting game from a market perspective, because early in the week, I want to say it was either Monday after we were done recording or first thing Tuesday. Might have been late Monday. You know, I got a note sent to me like, hey, really like the Lions in this spot. And that was the initial move from 3.5 down to 3. And I just like, can't do that one. The matchup is just horrible. And then eventually we saw another group spring into action twice. They laid the 3. It went out to like 3-20. And then they laid that again, and it went out to 3.5. And as you alluded to on game day, even some of the sharper shops trickled out to 4 before, I guess, there were some value hunters on the Lions. Cincinnati, though, to your point, it's not shocking. They spent like a boatload of money on defense the last two offseasons, and it's paying off. And then they fought in their own class and dominated, and I would say they actually went down in class, right? This wasn't Aaron Rodgers and the Packers offense. This was Jared Goff. Detroit had 3.8 yards per play and a 43% success rate. And coming into that game, I started looking around because I just felt like I was missing something. I was like, man, there is a real battle here. Someone sees a massive edge, whether it was, you know, the Lions or the Bengals. Guys were firing that game. And I went and looked, and it was like, where Detroit was most successful this season throwing it to backs and tight ends, the Bengals were top five in defensive efficiency defending those two position groups. And then obviously, since he's done a very good job stopping the run, when you spend $1 trillion on DJ Reader and then you have two good run-setting edges who, one you bought in free agency and one you extended, Cincinnati's very good defending the run. And so Detroit, 36 rushing yards on 18 carries. It was just a bad game plan, right? Like it's a matchup nightmare because you stop the run and then the only thing you're relying on is Goff throwing short. And as I alluded to, like the Bengals really defend that area of the field well. So good to see the Bengals get on track. Big game this weekend. We'll find out if they're truly for real. I think they're improved. I don't think that's a debate. Joe Burrow starting to come around a little bit more and you have a ton of weapons. So this will be a big test for them against the Ravens next weekend.
There's no doubt when you look at the pecking order in terms of the NFC North, every team at least 500 or better, the Browns and Steelers picking up the rear at 3-3, but the Ravens a game lead on the field as Cincinnati checks in at 4-2. Division that we thought was going to be extremely competitive coming into the year, but we thought it was going to be potentially a 2, maybe 3-horse race at max, and now suddenly you have 4 teams that are relevant. We'll see who can remain above the fray. What else did you see, Payne, in the positive manner that stood out? I'm sure we're not here to heap accolades on the Jacksonville Jaguars getting their first win of the season or anything along those lines.
No. I think you go with the Vikings. I thought that was a massive game for their season. You get back to 500. Offensively, they were outstanding. Most yards in 17 years of that organization. Third most yards in Vikings franchise history. That game should have never found its way into overtime. And Minnesota outgained Carolina by more than 260 yards. Kirk Cousins was fantastic. 7 explosive passes, completion percentage 6% above expectation. And I think the biggest thing coming into that game when you broke it down was like which team could get pressure on the quarterback, because both offensive lines have some question marks. And I thought Kirk Cousins kind of won that battle. And the O-line did a good job. They created some holes for Dalvin Cook, but Cousins was pressured on 17% of his dropbacks. Sam Darnold was pressured on 36% of his. And part of it was quarterback play. Part of it was the game plan. Because if you kind of just look at time to throw, Cousins got the ball out at the 4th fastest rate this week. Darnold the 6th slowest. And I think that made all the difference in which of the quarterbacks were pressured and ultimately which of the offenses succeeded. So I think you give the Vikings offense a ton of credit there for going out, and you hate to label it a must win, but you know, huge game. You either drop to 2-4 or you're 500 and looking ahead to the rest of the season. I did think Zimmer kind of crapped the bed again late there. I just, some of the decision making is just driving me nuts with that team. And you have a chance to seal the game away late by kicking a field goal. And I'm not saying you attempt the uber long one of the 50 plus variety to go up 2 scores, but that probably is a chance where you give your kicker a shot to just flat out end the game there. But some of the play calling, right? Like you need a couple yards, you're at the 35, and then on third down, we're pitching the ball 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and then we get stopped, and Zimmer, the conservative man he is, takes a delay game and punts it, and then you have Sam Darnold pick up 2 fourth down conversions on your defense. So good performance from the Vikings, hoping for a little bit more from Zimmer. It does look like his defense is starting to come around a little bit, though.
Oh, I think the defense is going to be, yeah, you know, well into the top half of the league by the time the season continues to unfold this way. But you're right, when you talk about late game decision making, Minnesota has done nothing to make life easy on themselves. I mean, these are games that they should be winning and finding separation, whether it's against the Lions, whether it's this particular spot. You can only live on the razor's edge so long before we see these tight games go against them, and what we saw early in the season. But Minnesota anyways moves to 500. They'll have their bye week coming up, and we'll see what this group looks like going forward in a good direction. I'm not sure if this is good on one team and bad on the other, or a combination of both. I want to give the Raiders some credit. The market absolutely hated them this week. We saw Denver go from a 3-point favorite out to 5. We know that there were multiple buy points on Denver. It didn't stop the Raiders from dominating the game. And for those folks that didn't watch, 34-24, not nearly as indicative of the dominance that we saw from the Raiders. A game they led 31-10 going into the fourth quarter. They were able to hit countless explosive plays over the top. They got Henry Ruggs involved and actually averaged 8.2 yards per play. They had 52 offensive snaps to 77 for the Broncos. And yet again, Payne, the Raiders, they get credit, and I guess it provides a logical segue into the disappointing, or the good, the bad, and the ugly, as we call it, for Denver's defense. It just flat out didn't show up for the second straight week.
What you're seeing from Denver is a couple things, right? The schedule got more difficult. Offensive weapons got injured. You're without Judy and Hamler. The O-line got banged up, and Vic Fangio's defense keeps having brain farts, and they're getting lost in the secondary right now. 16 explosive passes they've given up the last 3 games, 7 on Sunday to the Raiders. That's good for 31st in explosive pass defense the last 3 weeks. And my understanding is if the big play prevention doesn't get rectified on a short week against Cleveland, there could be some changes to some position coaches on that Broncos defensive staff. That said, I think Derek Carr was fantastic, and I think you credit him for being a leader this week with everything going on. He came out, set the tone in the press conference, and then led by example on the field. And he was awesome yesterday. Completion percentage 11% above expectation. Completed air yards almost 11.5. And so with a figure like John Gruden out, the biggest face of the franchise is now Derek Carr. And I thought in game 1, as the biggest face of the franchise, he was awesome. Led by example and set the tone. And that was a monster win for the Raiders. And I think the season is still ahead of them, although I'm not quite sure they're as good as some of the numbers and metrics indicate. And I'm not sure they're as good as the record, but that was a big win for the Raiders yesterday.
There's no doubt. Team couldn't have been more diametrically opposed from what we saw the preceding Sunday, where they looked anemic and lifeless at home against the Chicago Bears. A winnable game on the surface this coming Sunday as they'll welcome in Philadelphia. Should be a fascinating contest, seeing how the Eagles perform with extended rest, getting some cogs back, and if the Raiders are able to embrace that favorite role. As far as other bad performances, Payne, I don't know if you'd pick at the low-hanging fruit, but of course the Cleveland Browns not exactly going out there and lighting the world on fire either on the offensive or defensive side yesterday.
I stopped watching that game like intently in the live version of it after four possessions. Once you go down 14-0, Cleveland's edge of being able to run the ball gets a little bit negated there. And you become a passing team with Baker Mayfield without his two tackles and without Jarvis Landry and a beat up OBJ after he gets injured and fallen on. And I believe he kind of went into the locker room, got shut up, and then kind of came back out for the second half. Kareem Hunt also exits with the calf injury, carted off, so that looks semi-severe. Give Arizona all the credit in the world, right? They were shorthanded too. They jumped out early. The defense held on late. But it's one of those games where I went back this morning and kind of had the rerun in the background watching it, you know, in like its condensed format. And then you start digging into some of the advanced box score stuff. And it's like, you know, Kyler Murray, first three quarters, held to 5.6 yards per pass attempt and a 41% success rate. How Arizona basically has 30 going into the fourth quarter is a head scratcher. And then you quickly see third and 21 touchdown, third and goal at the 14 touchdown, 6 points scored that took a grand total of -5 yards to achieve. And then you're a +2 in turnover differential in the first half for Arizona. And then all three fumbles, which Arizona had in the first half, they recovered. And when you look at Cleveland take momentum back, they're down 9 with the ball first and 10 at the Arizona 42, and Baker turns it over again, and the game's over at that point. So good win for Arizona. Give them credit. A lot of money came in late, mostly public money. That was one of the public dogs that absolutely crushed the books yesterday was the Cardinals. But give them credit for going 6-0, right? We can sit here and say the Browns were shorthanded, but so weren't the Cardinals. Obviously, they're without their head coach. Now, Vance Joseph did a very good job. He's been an NFL coach in this league and thought he did a pretty good job yesterday. But, you know, a lot of the things that we identified in that game of, you know, liking Cleveland kind of gets thrown out the window when you're down early after some mistakes. And again, it wasn't like Kyler went out there and lit the world on fire. So it's becoming an interesting team that's tough to gauge. I don't think anyone, you know, if you look at their Pythag stuff, they're not anywhere close to a 6-win team, but they're finding some veteran leadership with guys like J.J. Watt. Kyler's taking on more of that role, and they seem like they are playing well together. There's no doubt about that.
A team that will be a massive favorite this weekend as they'll welcome in the Houston Texans, Arizona. Right now, a 17-point chalk at FanDuel Sportsbook. And Payne, while we gave Minnesota's offense a ton of credit for their offensive explosion that we saw yesterday, how much of that burden of proof falls on a Carolina defense that we had talked about as being one of the more underrated units coming in? We know they're banged up in the secondary, but the Vikings, I mean, were able to do what they wanted when they wanted, and that game probably not as close if Carolina doesn't get a block punt for a touchdown and a variety of other factors that work out in their favor.
I like Carolina's defense. But I think we also understood after 3 weeks it wasn't the best defense in the league, like every metric indicated, because you played two rookies making their first NFL starts, and then you had Jameis Winston without 7 offensive coaches and analysts. And so that wasn't going to be what Carolina's defense was going to face on average moving forward. J.C. Horn goes down with his injury, and not only is it a great player at a premium position, but he allowed Carolina's defense to play the style it wants. And then this past week, you had Shaq Thompson and C.J. Henderson out. And so what you have right now, it looks like to me, is an average to slightly below average defense. And at the same time, Sam Darnold's been horrible the last 12 quarters, fallen right back into some of his old ways. And he makes a horrific decision early where he's late on a throw, just kind of sitting back in the pocket, patting the ball. And then, you know, his fifth read, he tries throwing back across his body, across the field, and it's picked off. And that kind of set the tone for the game because he's pretty conservative thereafter. Robbie Anderson had a case of the drops, but altogether, you're looking at Sam Darnold completion percentage 17% below expectation yesterday, and he's gradually getting worse. Whether it's teams kind of catching on to what Joe Brady's doing, the loss of CMC, it's not a great offensive line. All of those things are at play here, but basically you're just kind of, if you're looking at a stock chart, and Sam Darnold is your stock, it's just kind of slowly going downwards the last 3 weeks. It's increasingly getting worse. So we'll see what the Carolina Panthers are, but the schedule got a little bit more difficult for the defense, and Sam Darnold has not been good the last 3 weeks.
Anything else in the bad category that you wanted to make sure we hit on?
I think one of the games for us that was a little frustrating because we originated the move over 42.5.
Oh, I was gonna throw this in the full blown ugly category. I'm not even sure this falls into the bad with where you're going here.
Yeah, I just, you know, we got out, went over 42.5, and then there were, you know, a couple groups that came in behind us. One came in fairly quickly after us, I would say within minutes. And then that leaked it out to 43.5. And then finally you got a huge game day move. And I believe Pinnacle closed like 45.3 on this total. But we're talking about the Colts-Texans total. I thought it was going to be an easy winner. And somehow the Texans come out and have trips to the Colts. 41, 35, 13, 22, 37, and 23. And somehow managed 3 points all day. And even without the Texans really pushing Indy, the Colts hang 31 themselves. I hate to say this because I think David Culley is probably a great guy and he's paid his dues, been in the league since 1994. Somebody gave him a chance. And I think despite the losing weekend, I'm in a good mood. And so I will say... In life, we probably all ask for a chance to prove ourselves, and David Culley got that chance, so you were happy to see it. But if I were to put this in the right perspective, David Culley is basically the guy on fry duty at McDonald's, and they've given him the position to take over for Jeff Bezos at Amazon. He's terrible.
Sounds like my old boss at Caesars back in the day. Started on the front line working in food service, and they let him run race and sports. He's no longer in the industry for a reason, unfortunately for him.
And David Culley won't be in the industry as a head coach after this year either. I just, you know, it's not working, right? He doesn't know when to accept the penalty or decline them. He doesn't know situational football. He has no concept or vibe or feel for the game, so he doesn't know when to go for it. I mean, earlier this year, the Texans had a 3rd and 15 where they pick up 14 yards, but there's an offsides penalty. Okay, on the defense. He declined the penalty, and we all thought, like, hey, on 4th and 1, he's going to go for it from midfield. And he said, nah, I'm just going to punt it away. So rather than going for it on 4th and 1 from midfield or accepting the penalty and saying, hey, let's give our offense a chance here on 3rd and 10, he must have thought he was in Canada or something. And I don't know what happened, but basically he punted on 4th and 1. So these are like the decisions that he's made all season that are just so brutally bad that no one in his position could possibly make, and you'd feel good about them leading your team. And again yesterday, like down 14, middle of the third quarter, he's got a 4th and 1 from roughly midfield and he punts. Then there's the final play, which is just kind of the culmination of the Texans yesterday. But there's a final play of the third quarter where the Texans are down 21. It's 2nd and 10 from the Colts 24. Texans, of course, call a run play on 2nd and long for a 32-year-old tailback. And Mark Ingram gains 2 yards. I don't know what happened, but Unger must have hit the wrong hole, because in between quarters, you see David Culley just chewing him out. How about not running on second and 10, down 21 from the Colts 24? Just everything is being mismanaged there. And you just wonder when that ship ultimately sinks for the Texans, because you got a bunch of veteran guys who kind of all know the situation. A lot of them are on their last limb, right? They're all playing for like one more contract. But at some point, you see a guy who's just like clueless and putting you in bad positions. I would just wonder if some of the veterans pack it in. I'm also, this is interesting because we're kind of going off onto left field here, but you will know how poorly the Texans franchise is run if they are in rebuild mode and turn back to Tyrod Taylor rather than figuring out if you have your potential franchise quarterback in Davis Mills while you're shopping your other franchise quarterback in Deshaun Watson.
They are 100% going to go back to Tyrod Taylor. I can guarantee you of that. They will go back once Tyrod is fully healthy and ready to go.
I'm just absolutely freaking clueless if that happens.
You can't teach stupid sometimes, and apparently that's what the Houston Texans are working with. We knew the roster wasn't overly talented by any stretch of the imagination. We'll see how much fight is left, especially this weekend when they take on one of their fallen comrades, so to speak, J.J. Watt, who moved on to greener pastures. That's the good, the bad, and the ugly for NFL Week 6. Plenty of things to be excited about for various fan bases. Plenty of things to be demoralized if you root for a handful of teams as well. You can follow Payne on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. Most importantly, follow the podcast, at BetTheBoardPod, for any contest, industry updates, all sorts of great content that we've put on our website all season long. From all of what we saw, Payne, to what we may see this coming weekend, a quick look at some of the look-ahead lines and the adjustments at FanDuel Sportsbook. The Packers out to a 9.5-point favorite as they'll welcome in the Washington football team. Look-ahead number here had the Packers listed as a 7.5-point chalk.
Serious concerns for Washington's defense. If we weren't already at like high alert, they're having troubles, and the Chiefs hung 31 yesterday while still continuing to throw up on themselves with turnovers. Three turnovers in plus territory. Two, I believe, were in the red zone, and the Chiefs still hung 31. So I'm not quite sure what's going on with Washington's defense. It's clear that Ron Rivera and his guys are not on the same page. They're not getting pressure, and that was one thing I looked at, because you and I discussed Washington, Kansas City, and you're like, yeah, some big money came in on game day on Washington, and I'm just like, this isn't for me, right? We kind of saw this game play out already when Kansas City went to Philadelphia. And the other thing that was concerning to me, and really what is happening here, if you're just kind of putting it in a easy picture, Washington's defense is not getting pressure, and so they are blitzing at the second highest rate and getting pressure at one of the five lowest rates in the league. And so that's going to leave the rest of your defense exposed when you don't get home. And they're not getting home. And that's basically what's going on with Washington's defense. And Aaron Rodgers probably is not a guy that you want to blitz and not get there. You also have some offensive woes going on, right? You're without a lot of your weapons, and that's making life difficult for Taylor Heinicke. You know, you're down two offensive linemen this past week. Antonio Gibson is playing maybe at 65%. Terry McLaurin wasn't 100%, but battled through it. Curtis Samuel was out this past week. Logan Thomas was out this past week. So that's really what's going on, is Washington's defense has regressed drastically, and the offense is really beat up right now. And it was an offense that was only going to be, right? Like, when you came into the season, it was like, if Washington's offense can just be average and their defense is going to be elite, then they might make another run. And now you have a below-average offense that's injured and a defense that's one of the worst in the league through 6 weeks.
Yeah, the only thing they're making a run towards at the current pace is the top of the NFL draft to try and acquire a franchise quarterback that can come in there and right the ship. But we'll see what we get from Washington on a week-in, week-out basis. It hasn't been pretty thus far, and the market, as we can tell, is beginning to adjust accordingly. A game that we've seen a five-point move on, Payne, albeit not through any key numbers, right in your backyard, the Miami Dolphins. Look-ahead number here had the Finns a 2.5-point favorite. Now, as we see Atlanta catching some steam as road favorites, they're out to 2.5. Of course, part of this, or a large part, I should say, isn't just the Dolphins' loss against the Jags, but mounting injury concerns both with the defensive backfield and at the wide receiver position.
That's exactly right. you know, you have to downgrade the Dolphins off the loss. You also have to realize that this is probably an 0-6 team. They luckboxed into their opening road win at the Patriots. If Harris doesn't fumble that ball, they're an 0-6 football team. Offensively, they had some weapons down yesterday. Obviously, Devontae Parker was out. Preston Williams was out. Will Fuller was out. We'll have to monitor the status of all three of those receivers. Both of the starting corners, where you have allocated the large sum of money when you look at the overall team salary cap, both those guys were out, in Byron Jones and Xavien Howard. So a lot of key cogs at a lot of key positions with how you play football in the year 2021 when you're out three receivers and you're out your two starting corners. You also have a beat-up Dolphins team versus an Atlanta team that is off their bye. And so that's the reason for this move. Now, it is through zero, the 5 points. It's probably the least substantial five-point move you'll ever have. But that is why we've seen this move. It'll be interesting to see where this goes, how high it gets. At some point, I am sure if this were to get to the three and you had some health status upgrades for the Dolphins, the mindset may change.
Something we will keep eyes on as the week continues to go. Always interesting when you see a dome team on the road playing in humidity, nearly a field goal favorite. Obviously, it does change the teaser dynamic more than anything else, but like you talked about, if you're going to have a five-point move anywhere, going from one team being favored by 2.5 to the other doesn't change the handicap the same way it would moving through multiple key numbers. Speaking of keys, you do have one game on a look-ahead price that was set to open below a key. That's now moved on to a key number, FanDuel Sportsbook. That, of course, would be the Las Vegas Raiders, 2-point favorite in the look-ahead market. Now a full field goal as they'll welcome in a Philadelphia Eagles team fresh off a cover, albeit a loss against Tampa on extended rest.
For at least a week, right, the concerns of losing your head coach aren't quite there. Now you've put some stuff on film. We'll see if what that looks like. Philadelphia does have extended rest and prep, having played Thursday night, showed some fight late, although again another ugly performance on offense. They probably did not deserve to cover that game or be remotely close in that game, so you do have to kind of factor that in. But it'll be interesting to see how high this line gets and ultimately where some money comes in, because there's probably some advantages for Philadelphia's offense just kind of looking at this matchup, right? We've seen some teams be able to run the ball a little bit on the Raiders, and we'll have to monitor the Trayvon Mullen injury, because that could open up some deep passes for the Eagles offense. But I think we kind of see what the Eagles defense is when it steps up in class, and so they've performed very well against the bottom feeder offenses, and they've been exposed against the better offenses. And I think the key to this game is figuring out where the Raiders lie within the realm of offenses. That'll go a long way.
No doubt about it. Should be an interesting football game here amid a very small slate with a number of teams taking their bye. I mean, those are about the extent of what we're looking at as far as look-ahead adjustments. You did have the Arizona Cardinals go from a 14.5-point favorite out to 17, 2.5-point move. I'm not even going to call 17 a secondary key number in the NFL, although when we begin to look at what some of these spreads may be going forward with the haves and have-nots, have a feeling we're going to see a lot more two-touchdown favorites out there. Eventually, one of these dogs will start barking and try and blow up survivor pools, but for the last couple weeks, the status quo has been held as favorites are performing exceptionally well, especially those teams laying more than a touchdown. Now, will that hold true this evening, where Buffalo goes on the road to take on the Tennessee Titans? And you're looking at Buffalo, a 6-point road favorite at FanDuel Sportsbook. The number is trending up, leaking out towards that 6.5 range. Total in this game sits at 53.5. And if we're talking about narratives here, the Bills could clearly have some revenge on their mind from a 42-16 game that was moved last year because of COVID issues, where they played on a Tuesday night. The Bills have now won 5 straight road games, scoring 34-plus points in all of those contests. They've outscored their last 5 road opponents by 121 points, and since losing their season opener against the Pittsburgh Steelers, have outscored their opposition 156-41. Meanwhile, on the other side, for the Tennessee Titans, they haven't exactly been stalwarts at home. They've lost 4 of their last 6 in their own building. all expectations were that this team was going to be significantly healthier coming into this particular spot, but at the same time, all that optimism on Thursday's practice report may not bear fruit as Bud Dupree, full practice Thursday, downgraded. You look at A.J. Brown, the mysterious, let's pop up on the Sunday injury report with a little bit of an illness. But Payne, when you try and handicap this game, is it as simple as trying to figure out if the Titans can get at least one stop against this Bills defense? Offense, or is it more about Tennessee being able to keep pace offensively against a resurgent Bills stop unit?
Yeah, let's kind of... I don't have a ton on this game, and I think ultimately we'll get to the price point of this game, but what does Buffalo do offensively? That'll be the interesting component here, because I think it becomes the driving force for the rest of the game and how it plays out. You have a Titans team that basically lives in nickel defense, and that should allow the Bills to have some success targeting the slot, and Daboll does a really good job moving his receivers around. You'll see Diggs in the slot at times. You'll see Emmanuel Sanders occasionally occupy the slot, but for the most part, it's Cole Beasley. He lives there. 90% of his snaps come from the slot. And so you're looking at a Titans defense that's allowed the fourth most passing yards to the slot despite facing one of the easiest passing schedules in the league. Really, what's crushed the Titans defense, though, is giving up the monster explosive, 28th explosive pass defense. So maybe you see Diggs get on track here a little bit more and catch a deep ball or two. But what's bizarre is that if you look at the Titans and you look at some of their down-to-down metrics, they're not horrific. They're actually fourth in passing success rate defense, just the explosiveness that's really killed them. Christian Fulton looks like he's out, correct, Todd?
Yep, by all accounts, he's ruled out.
Yep, and he has been the Titans' best cover corner to date by a long mile. So that'll be a significant injury in the secondary for the Titans. I'm interested to see what Mike Vrabel and Shane Bowen come up with tonight, because they're going to have to figure out how to manufacture some pressure. It initially looked like Bud Dupree would be back. You kind of alluded to that, like was full on Thursday, then not there on Friday. Not sure what to make of that situation, but I think we'll find out here in a little bit. When Josh Allen has been at his worst this season, it's when he's blitzed. So let's see if that is ultimately the game plan, saying, hey, if we're going to give up the explosive anyway, why not try to create some negative plays and get Buffalo off the field or create a turnover? If we're just going to kind of sit back in our shell and get gashed over the top, might as well be a little bit more aggressive. And so the Titans are top 10 in blitz rate. Maybe they're able to get home. Buffalo Bills offensive line is certainly, I think, improved, but it's probably the weakest part of the entire offense. So let's see if some of those blitzes do get home. But I think you're not looking for miracles here. The key to this side of the ball is the Titans defense just being good enough to keep this game close so their offense can run the ball. And right now, what's transpired is the Bills have led by double digits for more than 52% of their snaps this year. So opposing teams have become pretty one-dimensional, and that can't happen here. I do know, obviously, looking at this game and how it will play up match-out-wise, that Brian Daboll is obviously very smart, and he understands that getting out to a lead in this game probably is going to dictate what the Titans are capable of doing offensively. So I think the game plan for Buffalo is going to be to get out fast. And they obviously, you know, we're all looking for that like down spot off the big win. But you kind of hinted at that, Todd, at the top, was this is a game that they've had circled a little bit. You know, they were on the tarmac ready to head to Tennessee last year and said, we're not going to play this game. We effed up. And so Buffalo has kind of had this one circled. They've been a little bit pissed off about that. And obviously they've had extended, you know, some extended time here with some of their rest and prep, and Daboll's pretty good with game plans. So getting that extra day may help them a little bit here. But I think that's the ultimate key, is the Titans to stay within this game. They have to just do enough defensively, right? Hold to three. And that's been a tough proposition, because you're looking at a Bills offense top six and red zone execution. So if Tennessee can kind of keep this game from getting too away from them defensively, then it at least allows their offense to be in a position to have some success against Buffalo.
You know, it's early in the season, but when you look at Buffalo, they lead the league now in both scoring offense and scoring defense. There have only been two teams in NFL history that have ever had that distinction. Green Bay, back in 1996 with Brett Favre, they won the Super Bowl, and the only other team to do it, Payne, the 1972 undefeated Miami Dolphins. So I'm not talking about Buffalo's dominance being there just yet, but awfully interesting when you see how good they've been on both sides of the ball. Did want to ask you about one thing we saw transpire last Sunday in Kansas City, and I'm not quite sure if this is more of a changing of the guard and probably something that DFS players can take advantage of. Devin Singletary only played 15 snaps to Zach Moss's 42. Do we think Moss is poised to be officially that true number one back for everything Buffalo wants to do, relegating Devin Singletary maybe more to a third down situation than anything else?
I know last week, well, I shouldn't say this, about a year ago, they were certainly more fond of Zach Moss than they were Devin Singletary. And then Singletary had a good start to the season. Moss is a little bit banged up. I think they like Moss's versatility a little bit more. I think they like him a little bit better in pass protection. I think they like him a little bit more as a pass catcher, which is interesting, right? Because at Utah, the knack on him was he was a bit of a plotter. So ultimately, I don't know what Buffalo is going to do with their distribution of snaps and carries, but I know last year they liked Moss a little bit better. They've been pretty split prior to last week, but last week is certainly something to monitor for the things moving forward. I'm not sure ultimately what they're going to go with this week. I do think if we're looking, though, at the Titans offense, they're going to have to be able to run the ball tonight, and that'll be the biggest thing. Are they in a situation, is the game in a neutral state which allows them to run the ball? And the difference in this matchup this year versus last year when Tennessee blew them out is the Bills right now have been pretty lights out. They're number one against the run. And that's been pretty shocking because they play some light boxes. Now they faced the fourth easiest run schedule. And as I alluded to, they've been in command of these games to where teams aren't really running the ball on them anymore. They've become one dimensional. But if Tennessee can't run, either efficiently or because of the score, you're then in a situation where Ryan Tannehill and the Titans O-line missing some key components and already had struggles protecting Tannehill will be under duress pretty much all night. And I think you'll see a little bit different of a game plan here from Buffalo's defense. I think they will send more pressure than they did last week where they did not blitz Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs a single time. That will change. The other thing that's interesting here, and what would make me a touch nervous about the Titans, is they have really struggled out of the gate. They have been slow starting offensively, and whether it's the new OC not having the right game plans or teams loading the box, or, you know, and there's really an ability to load the box when A.J. Brown isn't himself and Julio Jones has missed time, then it becomes, hey, we just have to really stop the ground game here. But right now, you're looking at the Titans' offense 26th in rushing success rate in the first halves of games. 24th most efficient offense in terms of success rate in the first half overall. So if Tennessee is not able to keep this game close early, they're going to have a tough time playing catch-up based upon the way they're able to protect Ryan Tannehill. And I believe A.J. Brown came out and said, hey, like, I'm going to be on limited snaps until about week 10. And then you mentioned some of the illness that came down to the two receivers. Let's monitor that. But here's the problem that I'm having, Todd, is that if everyone was playing, if A.J. Brown and Julio Jones are up, we make the game four. So there is going to be a situation here, and I'm not sure we get to that price. We may get to the price if one of the receivers are announced out, which then I don't really want it at that point. But if the receivers are up and we get to a point where this gets to seven because it's nothing but one-way action on Buffalo and the books just got their brains beat in this weekend, it would be tough not to take the Titans if both A.J. Brown and Julio Jones are up.
The good old value bet, the one we didn't make last night on the Seattle Seahawks, plus six when we had the opportunity against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I'm sure our listeners did.
And I'm sure our listeners were...
Unfortunately, I didn't follow my own advice.
And I'm sure our listeners were not thrilled, and it was 14-0, and it looked like Seattle might be able to get past the 50-yard line once in the entire second half. until Pete Carroll started running Alex Collins downhill, and the Steelers' defense looked more like Matadors than they did the Steel Curtain. But either way, they were able to get there. And I do think, you know, that's a key point, not to go off on a tangent, because when you break down the X's and O's, I think all of us, when we look at some of these numbers, we may not love the matchup. But when the market gets so far out of whack, just out of principle, if you make those bets over the course of the long haul, you may not win every single one of them. But if you can win 55% of those so-called value bets, they're typically the spots you have to be in. They're smaller positions, and you try and nickel and dime your way to a little bit of profit in this business.
Yeah, if you can win 55% of your bets, you're doing quite well, whether it's a value bet, whether it's a large position, and that's ultimately the debate. If you know you can get seven here and all the receivers are up, it's a tough proposition not to take. And ultimately, my gut says we might be faced with that decision, but we'll see.
There's nothing like watching a standalone NFL game, whether it be a Thursday night or a Monday night, hoping the market doesn't get to a number where you're going to feel obligated to bet it. I think our listeners are right now, whether they're driving home from work or they're listening on their lunch breaks, or sitting there scratching their heads going, you guys tell us all the time it's all about getting your numbers, and here you are actively rooting against the game to get to a number, so you're forced into a bet.
Yeah, that'll be the interesting component here. The hope is that like AJ Brown and Julio Jones are both out, or this thing never gets to seven. That's the hope here. That's what we're looking for.
It's something we will keep tabs on. Just a couple of notes for Titans fans. I know we have a strong listenership there in Nashville. When you break down what the Titans have done offensively, you can't take anything away from Derrick Henry. He's obviously on pace to break single season rushing records, single season attempts, single season scrimmage touches. What I found fascinating, Payne, he's number one in the NFL in rushing yards coming into this week at 640. 461 yards come after contact. That alone would have him into the top five, actually at number three as far as rushing yards accumulated so far. And when you look at this Titans play action game that we know is a key tenet and staple under Arthur Smith, just one passing touchdown from play action so far this season, despite Ryan Tannehill having 22 of his 55 career touchdown passes as a member of the Titans were operating off play action. But it's not all doom and gloom there. Nearly half of their play action plays that they've operated from this year have gone for 10 plus yards, 46%, some of those numbers from NFL's Next Gen Stats. So things to keep tabs on to keep Buffalo honest. But like you said, all that gets thrown out of the window if the Bills hit them in the mouth and are up 14-0 8 minutes into the football game. I think they'd be more than happy to see Derrick Henry plod along in a game where Derrick Henry was held to actually less than 60 yards rushing last year, but it didn't matter in Tennessee's resounding performance. All right, my friend, it's a decent amount of heavy lifting for a Monday as we relive some of our mistakes over the weekend. Was there anything else you wanted to add before we take a little bit of a break and reconvene come Wednesday for a little college football discussion?
No, that's it. Kissed the sister this week and went a little 1-1 between college and the NFL and best bets. Hopefully we get that turned back around this coming week with a little 2-0. That'll be the goal.
Always interesting. You get a rocking chair Saturday in college football and a rocking chair the other way for the National Football League. But sometimes that's how the cookie crumbles in this business. Do want to remind all of you, our loyal listeners, FanDuel.com/bettheboard. All sorts of great promotions there, sign-up bonuses just in time for the start of NBA season, some enhanced odds boost, 30-1 available for you. So even if you don't know the NBA, it's tantalizing value to not pass up as you look to try and get involved there. So for Payne Insider, follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. Most importantly, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Best of luck with any Monday night football investments or wherever your sports wagering takes you. We'll be back here with you on Wednesday. But in the meantime, hopefully we'll see you at the window.
Thanks for listening to Bet the Board. You can catch Todd and Payne every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during football season, breaking down the biggest NFL and college football games. And to make sure you don't miss any free best bets, subscribe to Bet the Board on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.